Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem BPW number 82. That's Ba'is Panimi, Shear for Women, Shear number 82. Another way of building trust is to allow your husband to grow and change. Again, like almost everything we've been discussing about establishing respect and building trust goes both ways. Allowing your husband to grow and change. Everyone, every Jew needs to strive to higher levels of personal development, and they need to support each other in that work. So a wife should encourage her husband to overcome his weaknesses, build his strengths, allow him to change, allow him to grow, allow forgiveness of past mistakes, and show faith in his potential for improvement. And this cannot happen if she refuses to forget his past offenses. You made mistakes in the recent past, far past. It needs to be letting go, because forgetting is directly related to forgiving. When a wife sincerely forgives her husband for a wrong that he did against her, it's wiped off the slate. It's done. It's over. And we are all obligated to forgive others for wronging us. And the more we forgive others, the more Hashem will forgive us for the wrongs we do. When we ask Hashem to forgive us on Yom Kippur, we ask Him to do it with a pure heart. And we ask, when we forgive others, but by night we try to remove those grudges by davening for this and asking for forgiveness at night to forgive the people that hurt you, it'll help us reduce the chance of holding a grudge. And a person, the nature that's given, that's healthy, is to let go. If a wife needs to know, she needs to let go of a certain grievance. He already apologized. It's over. So she establishes a deadline. For example, if her husband was late in meeting her at a location and the lateness inconvenienced her, distressed her, so she could refer to the incident again, but make a maximum period. It's for 3 weeks. In a 3 week period, I can mention it because I want not to do this again or to work with it, to resolve it. So it's better, ideally, if it really bothers her and it's a pattern, to work with her husband to try to resolve it earlier and forgive him totally and move on from it. But if you give a 3 week month period, then she could refer back to that if it's necessary, but never after that. After that month, it's as if it never happened. I address it, and if I didn't address it, I move on from it. Like Yom Kippur. When Hashem forgives us on Yom Kippur, it's a total forgiveness. That's the deadline, Yom Kippur. He's Michael you. Finished. Same thing here. You something bothers you, you need to work on it in a constructive way with your husband, work it through. Try to do that right away. Do a deadline period, not more than a month tops. You try to resolve it then, but once you didn't take action, you let it go. You let it go. Don't mention the mistake again. And you're mekayim the mitzvah of not allowing, not basically recalling sins of the past, which is really a not healthy thing. Another process of forgiving is, because if you do that, you won't pigeonhole your husband. What does pigeonholing mean? It's more or less that there's a label that you stick on him, that a wife places on her husband, and he's stuck with that label. He's stuck with that label. He can't change. This is the way it is. And if he senses that she believes this, that she made up her mind, my wife made up her mind, I can't change, and that's her belief, Then what's the use? Why should I try to convince her that I can change? She already labeled me. She already said, oh, this person is a person who's always late. This person is a person who's always not responsible. Husband sees this and he gives up. You see, it's important to point out a mistake, but not that to the extent that he sees and he senses that she sees in him that she's not capable of changing. She always needs to see in him that he is capable of changing. And forgiveness of a wife allows her husband to overcome those negative patterns. And she needs to be patient to allow him to overcome these shortcomings. And the potential exists that he will constantly improve. So, for example, I'm going to pick one of the examples here. Husband says, "Do you mind if I borrow your good scissors for a few minutes?" And the wife says, "Yes, I mind. Because last time you took them and you kept them in your drawer for a month afterwards, and I couldn't find them when I needed them." And the husband is saying to his wife, "Well, that was 2 years ago." The right approach is, the husband says, "Would you mind if I borrow the good scissors for a few minutes?" A wife could say, "Go ahead, but please put them back in my sewing drawer right afterwards." That's all. No mention of that 2 years ago he did whatever he did. And then you see, hopefully he'll put it back in that sewing drawer. If, the 24-hour period, it's not there, then she could approach him and says, I asked you to put my scissors back. Where are they?" And he could talk to her about it, put it back, whatever. But that's the right way of doing it, not bringing back the past things. Yes, he has this tendency, obviously. He needs to work on it. But again, by dragging in the past all the time, it'll be much harder for him to grow. And you're going to say, on the other hand, "Oh, he's a mature adult. He should know this on his own. He should learn how to grow without me giving him encouragement." Not so. He needs his wife's encouragement. That is so important. Not a sarcastic remark, not a hostile response, but a positive and encouraging reply to keep the mood pleasant. And this idea, the wife has a right to say, "I'm giving you my expensive scissors. Please put it back in the sewing drawer where it belongs." That's fine. That's perfectly okay. But that can be done in a pleasant way, contributing to Shalom Bayis, not the idea of always hanging this on him. And when the wife does not refer back to a previous failing, it allows the husband to move forward when he's ready to do so. It's optimizing his potential for growth. Ezer Kenegdoi. Another aspect of building trust, again, I say this so many times, it's a two-way street. I'm talking to the women now. I talk to the men equally with their obligations to their wives. So always remember that as I'm talking, to create emotional safety. Creating emotional safety. And again, usually it's, we know we talk to men a lot because the women really need this emotional safety in the relationship. But don't think that because a man is generally more independent and out there, seemingly stronger, I say seemingly, don't assume that he feels emotionally safe with you. One needs to rely on one's spouse, their wife. A husband needs their wife to feel emotionally safe to them. They should feel emotionally safe to her, with her. The communication being straightforward, being reasonable, being predictable, being honest, being kind. It's very difficult for a husband to trust his wife if she has erratic behavior, or if she's unpredictable in her behavior, or she's unpredictable in her moods, where sometimes she's very calm, other times extremely excitable, like a walking time bomb, sometimes very kind, sometimes very cruel. And that is emotional abuse. And he needs to know he's safe from emotional abuse. It's a two-way street. She cannot be emotionally abused by her husband. He cannot be emotionally abused by his wife. And don't say, "Oh, he's a man, he could take it." No. It's emotional abuse. It goes two ways. Daily interactions, Baruch Hashem, generally do not provide a threat to emotional stability. But sometimes there's a conflict where the potential exists, where there could be these big outbursts of anger, big outbursts of frustration, where you'll lose control. So a wife, in her frustration or exasperation, will just say, "I'm leaving you, I'm leaving the house, I want a divorce, and let's call a rav, we're getting a get. Why did I ever marry you? Major mistake, biggest mistake I ever made," and so on and so forth. All these threats, threatening when suicide, all these things, These threats and statements hurt to the core the foundation of the marriage. Getting it to, you're basically creating that faulty floor to a breaking point. He doesn't know where he stands. He's afraid that the fragile union will collapse. No marriage can tolerate the threat of divorce or walking out. Love cannot grow if there is no complete trust. And even if the marriage does last and they don't get divorced, it's still going to be shaky. He'll always feel shaky. Now, it doesn't have to be as dramatic as like we explained. There's less dramatic ways that you could destroy trust in marriage. If you're angry and the wife just walks out of the house or locks herself in a room behind the slammed door, asks the husband to leave, doesn't talk to him, cold shoulder for 3 days, her behavior is showing that she is temporarily leaving him, or sulking, prolonged sulking. Very often after an argument, many wives will punish their husbands and not talk to them for hours or even days after that. And that creates a severe strain on the relationship. It's important, if he's an overall mensch, we're not talking about if your husband is abusive, like literally abusive. That's a separate situation if there is real physical and emotional abuse. But if it's a normal person that has their flaws and they made mistakes or they spoke insensitively, by doing this punishment of ignoring, stonewalling, creates a tremendous strain on the relationship. It interferes. He feels not emotionally safe. You have a right to be upset at what he does. You have a right to communicate, I'm disappointed and it hurt me. We talked about healthy ways to convey your displeasure or your upsetness at your husband for doing that wrong thing. But the punishment of ignoring for hours and days and just pulling away like that is tremendously painful, creates a severe strain, and it's not going to make him change his ways and get closer to you with that type of thing. Also, Rapam always said, carelessness in speech. We need to learn how to control our tempers, control our speech, not say things or do things that will cause damage to the relationship. Anger leads to many averis. Anger will make us violate halachas very often. And when you threaten to leave, what you're doing is you're inflicting pain on your husband. And we're not malachim. It's okay when we misbehave. But this concept of inflicting emotional pain, even as a nekama, retaliation, because you were afflicted by pain, that is not healthy. You have a right to protect yourself, but there's a way to protect yourself without inflicting further pain. You could express even despair in a way that doesn't affect or harm the marriage. There are productive things. Productive ways to convey these things. So, for example, if a husband says, I'm fed up with your complaints. And again, that's not the right way to say it. So he was not right for saying it that way. He needs to express himself in a more menschlicher way. But let's say he was insensitive and he said, I'm fed up with your complaints. Now the ball's in your court. You don't say, okay, call a lawyer. Let's get a divorce already. But if he says, I'm fed up with your complaints, you could respond back to him. I'm also quite unhappy. I hate these arguments we're having. Let's do something about it. I'm too upset to talk about it now. We should sit down tomorrow, figure out what we're going to do, figure out if we need outside help in order to go to get help with these complaints and ill will we have towards each other. That's a more right way of expressing it. So these things are very, very important. You could express your unhappiness without escalating a situation, without making it worse. And also with not discussing difficult issues spontaneously. Schedule time for a specific thing on a specific way. And sometimes when there's an unpleasant thing and you want to talk about it, designate only a 5-minute span, tops 10-minute span, 9 o'clock to 9:10. And then when 9:10 hits, don't go beyond it. Don't go beyond it. It's a sensitive subject. You set a maximum time between 5 and 10 minutes. Once the 10 minutes come, say, okay, we're taking a break now. When's the next time we could talk about this? In a couple of hours, tomorrow, fine. Don't discuss it more than, for 20 minutes, more than 20 minutes. It just creates more of a strain. This needs to be done. Sensitive topics need to be done in small doses and gradual but consistent. Very, very important. And also, if you have a painful subject that you had to talk about, switch this, once you're done with it, switch it to a more neutral topic or a more pleasant topic. Food, outing, small gifts, relaxing activity. You don't have to be dragged down completely by this painful subject. Also, if you feel yourself getting very angry, then cut it out. Cut it. You know, you say, now is, give me a couple of minutes. Let's talk about it. Sometimes if you can't resolve something, then you got to work together to get a third party, a Rav, trusted counselor, to help you get to that point. So again, the two-way street mention, of course, this goes both ways, but to allow your husband to grow and change by not pigeonholing him, by not labeling him, and creating an emotional safety for him where he, you could express things that you disapprove of, but not in a way that makes his whole relationship with you feel that it's off balance and that the world could cave in. Then there needs to be a certain sense of security as a spouse is trying to improve. Bracha natzlacha.